Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Our focus is commercial real estate, exploring vital questions, confronting commercial landlords, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, tenants, and anyone providing services to the industry. Your host is Howard Klein. His commercial real estate practice over 35 years has concentrated on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented with the sole intent of educating listeners. Howard and his guests are specifically not offering legal advice. If you need legal advice, consult your own counsel. CRE Radio is available live and downloadable anytime at creradio.com. Call in during the live show with your comments or questions, 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, and welcome to CRE Radio. I'm your host, Howard Klein, and today's show is about the movers and shakers of Southern California commercial real estate. We have for you youngsters out there, a mashup of interesting interviews, and for your oldsters, we'll call it a potpourri. Our featured guests include such notable icons of Southern California commercial real estate as Burton Young, president of Sperry Van S, Brandy Bircher, Chris Bennett, Frank Sanchez of BizNow Media, and a special interview with Chris Alexander, who I met at the IREM annual conference in Anaheim earlier this year. So, without further ado, why don't we go ahead and proceed with the show today, and let's start with Burton Young, who's going to give us some really good advice to us brokers out there on how to invest some of your commissions in your own real property so that you can be an owner also. Burton, welcome to the show. Burton, some time ago, we talked about how brokers can get out of the rat race of working from commission to commission and maybe even raise enough money to develop some retirement income, which is kind of a rarity among brokers. How do they go about doing this?
By either raising small funds, friends and family funds for themselves to go buy commercial real estate deals, or by leaving their fees in deals that are really promising and that they see lots of upside in. And I guess I'd equate it to, like, if you were a stockbroker and you're in the industry, in the market every day, and all of a sudden this company comes up and you notice its stock's trading very, very low, and you know the company's worth more than the stock, and the stock seems to be an extremely good value, you might want to invest your own money in that stock because you know there's upside because you're an industry expert or an insider. Same type of thing goes with real estate. Investment brokers all the time come across really good deals. Maybe it's off market. Maybe the seller's extra motivated and the price is getting discounted. And so I encourage brokers to sort of put their money where their mouth is, raise some funds from friends and family, and when these, you know, maybe once or twice a year a great deal comes up, invest in it themselves.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I hate to use the word insider because, of course, it has bad connotations. But for a real estate broker, if you're out there pounding the pavement, so to speak, and since I'm talking about social media, I guess that sounds contradictory. But really, the truth of the matter is if you're pounding the pavement, you're going to find really good deals, hopefully. Yeah. Why not invest in it?
This is the kind of market where that's going to happen. You know, this is the kind of market coming out of the major recession where there's pain and there's loans coming due and there's tenants going broke and there's vacancy. This is the kind of market where you're going to find good deals. 6 years ago in 2005, 2006, it was very hard to find a vacant property or distress-motivated seller. But now they're all over the place. And that's where, you know, brokers need to think outside the box on, hey, wait a minute, what am I doing for my retirement? I mean, my fees, my daily commission checks, pay the bills, put my kids through school, buy the groceries, and pay the mortgage. But realistically, if I'm going to retire, I need to be vested in something. And there's never been a better time to invest in commercial real estate.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. But is there a percentage or a number that you would recommend?
Well, I think it's a function of their financial stability or their financial net worth. I'll just give myself as an example. In the early 90s, I was doing anywhere from 8 to 18 deals a year. There's a lot of transactions, and every transaction, the paycheck was anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000. So I could afford to leave two or three of my commission checks in a deal and still have plenty of money to live off of. So I think what the brokers need to evaluate is how much can they set aside based on their deal volume and based on their income and based on their financial status and max that out as much as possible.
Well, in essence, that requires some self-control. I suppose you need to budget out what you're expecting to do for the year. And I would imagine that the amount of money that you leave in the deal would be partly dependent upon how good you think the deal is.
I suppose so. The reality is, and I've bought over $1 billion in real estate and hundreds of transactions, so it's very difficult to... You go into a deal and you think, oh, this is a great deal. And then you look at another deal and say, ah, this is not that great a deal. The deal you didn't think was so great could end up being the one that's phenomenal, and the one that you thought was going to be great might not end up as good. So I would be a little bit less focused on trying to pick the winner as I would be just pick a good deal, invest in the deal, and really no matter what, in 10 years, whatever you do today, in 10 years, it's going to be worth three or four times what it's worth today, and your equity could quadruple.
Well, I think that that's a good idea, but in today's market, a lot of the brokers out there are short on cash. How do you deal with, you know, the brokers are going, you know, I haven't closed a deal in a year. They may not be the brokers that you've got working for you, but there are a lot of brokers out there who are in that position.
Absolutely. And for those guys, I suggest they go out to their friends and family, to people they know, and they start raising a mini fund. I mean, my first acquisition, I think I put $100,000 down on a $500,000 shopping center that I basically flipped and sold for, I think it was $800,000. So I doubled or tripled our equity in probably less than 6 months on my first deal, which was a bank foreclosure deal, small little retail strip center. And so I'd say to the brokers, look, go to your parents and raise $100,000. Go to your uncles and aunts, raise another couple $100,000. Go to some of your friends and say, hey, if I find a great deal, let's put some cash together. I've even told the brokers to syndicate within themselves within an office. And so raise a mini fund. $300,000 could buy you a $1 million property that, you know, 5 years from now could be worth $2 million.
The assumption then is that you're a really good broker and you can identify good deals and you're out there working your butt off, and then this is the perfect time to buy. It may not be the perfect time to sell, but it'll be the perfect time to buy.
I agree. I think it's a terrible time to sell.
Well, I mean, this is not rocket science here. It's contrarian. You want to buy low. It's low right now. How do you see the market going? So if you're going to get involved in deals, are you anticipating, if we're talking about now, are we anticipating the market going down further, or are we anticipating that the market is going to be stable for a couple of years? Ultimately, we wouldn't be in this business unless we thought that the market would be going up eventually. But what about over the next 2, 3, 4 years? Should you wait?
Well, we all know that real estate is a cyclical investment. And we've probably come through four of the toughest years in the real estate history. You probably have to go back to the Great Depression to find values dropping further in a shorter amount of time. We're probably looking at commercial real estate values dropping in the 45% range in less than 3 years, between 07 and 2010. So, I mean, that's a massive drop off, not to mention the fact that rents on average have dropped about 30 to 40% as well on a property by property basis. taking apartment buildings completely out of the equation, just talking about commercial.
Sure.
So we're coming into this. We've been in this recession for 4 years. Okay, it's one of the longest dragged out recessions we've had. Things have pretty much bottomed out. Most companies are starting to show profits and are profitable. They're leaner, they're meaner. They've found ways to make money. Default rates are down. Collections are better. Managing assets is getting easier. There's more organic growth from tenants that are expanding, not hiring lots of people, but expanding and growing. So I'm not going to say we're out of it because we're not out of it, but really how much further can things drop? Right now we are at what I think an unbelievable time when you can buy assets that are 40% less than where they were 4 years ago. You can finance them at interest rates that are lower than they've ever been in 100 years, I don't know, but pretty low. And have positive leverage where you're buying deals at 7, 8, and 9 cap rates and borrowing money at 5%. I mean, if that's not phenomenal and exciting and great, I just don't know what is. I certainly don't feel great about 2% money market rates. The stock market's a little bit iffy. I mean, it's had a massive rebound. It's kind of back to where it was back in the before the crash. So really, where's the upside? I mean, the other thing you got to consider, too, is if we're going to come into an inflationary period, which everybody says is inevitable, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 4 years, maybe it's 5 years, but everybody believes that based on how much debt we've taken on, we're going to have to inflate our way out or inflation's coming, then being in real estate, as long as your debt's not variable, you're probably going to be in great shape over the next 10 years.
Now, do all of your brokers know how to get involved in a syndication?
I've given a few seminars to our guys. I think they're very experienced and up to speed with how to do it. It's a function of whether they will do it. It's like anything else. One of the things investment brokers are guilty most of, I think, is being scared, being afraid. It's not like investment real estate guys are sitting on millions of dollars. They're living paycheck to paycheck too, and so investing their money in a deal is very scary for a lot of them. The hardest investment that any investment real estate guy will ever make is his first investment in a commercial property or an investment property. But after 2 or 3 or 4 successes, it gets real easy. And, we had a 17-year track record of never making like less than probably 15 or 20% per year on a deal up until, December of 2008. And it got real easy to buy deals. It was almost like, how could we lose?
Sure.
And, of course, we found out how we could lose over the last 4 years, but that was a pretty cataclysmic recession we've just went through.
I think the smart money has been waiting around for the deals to happen. And, the issue is then how do you motivate your brokers to get over that fear?
Age-old
question.
I've done it by example. I mean, we've bought 5 properties in the last 2 years. And, the property I bought 2 years ago is probably the best deal of all of them. And yet that was a time when it was very scary to buy real estate, very uncertain and et cetera, et cetera. But of course, that's also why we got such a good deal on the property. So you just got to lead by example. And you basically have to show these guys, look, we just bought this property 2 years ago. It was 70% leased. The rents were here. 2 years later, it's now all filled up. The rents are here. I can sell it for this much. I'm going to make $3 or $4 million. This can happen to you.
Now, why don't we take a short break to hear from our sponsors?
Here's an exciting new tool for brokers and investors. RateBlend. RateBlend is a powerful online rent calculator that's quick and easy to use. Print and send detailed effective rent analysis with a single click. RateBlend is easy to read, so what does your spreadsheet mean goes away. RateBlend is accessible from your computer or any mobile device. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Andrew Bermudez, and links to RateBlend. Try it today.
I'm going to take a moment to let you know that Sperry Van S. is hosting their free and fabulous Brokers Forum Thursday, September 13th at the Pacific Club in Irvine. A panel of experts will be speaking about some new creative financing concepts for commercial real estate professionals. That's bound to be interesting. Breakfast and networking begin at 7:30 with the program and thumbnail property presentations immediately following. You'll want to be there for this. I will be. Remember, the Brokers Forum gets bigger every quarter. Just last quarter, there were over 280 CRE professionals there. Register early by clicking on the Brokers Forum ad on our website, creradio.com. It's Thursday, September 13th at the Pacific Club in Irvine. Sperry Van S. Brokers Forum. It's free. Don't miss it.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Hello there, and welcome back to CRE Radio. I'm your host, Howard Klein. Our next featured guest is a gentleman by the name of Chris Alexander. Now, I don't know if Chris is a Southern California mover and shaker like Burton is, or Brandy Bircher, who we'll be hearing from a little bit later on in the show, but Chris really has the wow factor. Actually, I first met Chris at the IREM annual convention in Anaheim. That's the Southern California annual convention.
And I'm here with Chris Alexander, who is an author and speaker, and I dare say a motivational speaker. And Chris was talking about the wow factor. Could you just give us a brief description of what that was, Chris?
Well, the wow factor really, when I talk to companies about it, it's about bringing the wow factor into their businesses and creating customers for life. But we really focus on the individual and the individual improving their ability to create a wow factor experience with each and every customer that comes in.
Well, that's true. You did say something that I found to be so very, very true as part of your presentation, which is not waiting for things to come to yourself. Could you talk briefly about that?
Yeah, I think that there's a dire need right now for individuals to be more proactive, to take the initiative, rather than be reactive. There's another way of saying that is to be more inner directed as opposed to being outer directed. We are controlled by fashion, by the media, by the health industry, and those influences do impact us, and that makes us sometimes give up our privilege of choice. But all success really comes from that choice that we make to use the talents that we have and proactively direct those talents towards, you know, the benefit of making an extra income or a love relationship or whatever it might be, because I truly believe that all success comes from the inside out, and it has to begin with that first choice that you make.
Could you teach me how to get my 17-year-old son off his butt and find a job and not wait for it to come to him?
Yes, I think that I don't know about you. I'd have to meet him first. but mostly anybody who has given up what it is that we're all passionate about, and that's life. Sometimes individuals at a very young age give up on that, right? Because they choose the path of least resistance, which many human beings are inclined to do. But the key really is for him to find a sense of purpose, whatever that purpose is. And I'll give it to you in a nutshell. If you can find out what he values highly, whatever that is that he values highly, and surround him with that, then he will be more motivated. Because your purpose comes from the things that you value highly. And it's the emotional drive that comes into being when you find out what it is that you're purposeful about, or that gives you purpose.
That's great advice. I'm going home right now, taking his head, and I'm going to bounce it on a basketball court. not really. Well, Chris, I understand you've written a book. I just saw you sign it for someone. What's the name of the book, and how do people get it?
Well, I've written several books. I've written two bestsellers. The one was Creating Extraordinary Joy and Joy in the Workplace. The one that you saw here is a new book. It's called Synergy Strategic Planning. And it's essentially a business book that helps small to medium-sized business owners have what corporations have. So we put that book together so that they can do many of the things that corporations do. They can create a clearly defined mission and vision for their company. They can assess their core values, and then they can strategically set up their objectives and goals. And in that way, they can, you know, focus on what we call a shared destiny principle. And that shared destiny principle is the most powerful principle in the world, isn't it? Because that's what the Constitution is.
And how do people get any of your books?
They can either go onto our website, which is synergyteampower.com, or you can get any of our books on amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. If you go to any bookstore, they're available. If they don't have them readily on the shelves, they generally have them there for you in a day.
Are they Kindle e-books?
They will be Kindle e-books pretty soon. We're not quite there yet. My publisher's working, furiously on that.
Well,
I ask that question a lot.
well, get on your publisher real quickly, because I don't read a book unless it's on my iPad.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And thanks for the advice.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Chris.
If you have the opportunity, I highly recommend that you see Chris when he speaks at one of his motivational seminars. He really is quite good. If you haven't noticed, I put Chris's interview right after Burton's interview, primarily because they were talking about the same thing. Standing up and going out and doing something. If you wait for the business to come to you, it won't happen. If you're a real estate broker, go out, put together a syndication, make your money, and I think that ultimately you'll be very happy that you did. Good advice from both of them. So why don't we take another short break, after which we will be hearing from Jack McNutt.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today.
Roger, you didn't mention that this year's NRTA annual convention is going to be held from October 7th through 10th at the Palm Desert Marriott in Palm Desert. I was about to say Palm Springs. If you're a tenant, you really, really should go to this event. It's a great event. It's highly educational, good networking, and should be a bunch of fun. Not only that, I'll be the keynote speaker at the luncheon on Monday. Oh, and did I mention this isn't only for retail tenants? They've got a whole office track to help out office tenants also. See you there. Let's hear about the Southern California office market a bit from Jack McNutt, Senior Managing Director at Newmark Grubb Knight Frank. Jack specializes in office, particularly in Orange County in the airport area, and he's been around for about 25 years, and he has some really interesting perspectives.
From my perspective, I feel that a lot of the decisions that corporate users are making are still the same objectives in terms of getting the best value opportunity available in the marketplace, you know, facilities that have image, facilities that have amenities, facilities that are efficient. So those are, you know, those are the basic drivers, economics being paramount as well. So tenants are going to shop around and try to drive the very best economics based upon what their objectives are.
Is this from a tenant or buyer perspective, or does it make any difference from your perspective?
Well, I would say that it's, I mean, from my perspective, it's going to be more from a tenant perspective in terms of the shopping. In terms of the buyer, you know, that's, again, that's that almost in a way is parallel. Investors, a particular investor, is going to be looking for a certain asset, and a certain investor is going to pay a very big price to get the very best assets. Another investor is a value add investor who would look at purchasing something at a, you know, below cost opportunity, and then investing money and securing tenants and creating value.
In New York in the 80s, when I did brokerage work, prestige was very important. You had to be on Park Avenue, or if you were in advertising, you had to be on Madison Avenue, and it would take a lots of work to convince somebody to move to another location.
Sure.
Has that changed?
You know, in our market, for example, you've seen some tenants jump from a particular submarket and branch out to others. For example, tenants that historically are in Newport Center, you would expect those tenants to stay in Newport Center.
Right.
And you would expect them not to consider, say, moving up to the airport area. Based upon that, as you say, Madison Avenue marquee address of being in Newport Center. Again, depending on availability of space, that could be a driver if a particular tenant needs additional space and all of a sudden looks at the product availabilities in the airport area and says, you know what, the image is strong enough, the amenity base is strong enough, and I'm going to be saving X amount of dollars, why should I not consider that? So you had like a Latham and Watkins had moved out of Newport Center. Gosh, it's been 15 years now. Maybe, you know, it's been you know, some time. But that was the first move, and it was like, my goodness, you would never have thought that they would leave Newport Center. You have Stradling and O'Melveny that are still in Newport Center, and they're not going to relocate out of there. But Latham did. MetLife had an investment group that was in Newport Center. They moved up to Jamboree Center in the airport area. So you see that kind of thing happening. You see tenants who are in the airport area that will migrate down to the Irvine Spectrum area based on where the decision maker lives.
Right.
Based on where the employees live, where you have often a number or a majority of your employees living in South Orange County. So, the, you know, and then the amenity base in the Irvine Spectrum is fantastic with the Irvine Center, the completion, so that becomes a viable option.
So the
being said, some tenants who had moved to the Spectrum now are coming back to the airport area. So you see different things happening with tenants based on, it's never predictable. Broadcom, let me talk about Broadcom. Broadcom was in the Spectrum. You would have thought they would have stayed in the Spectrum. Well, they moved up to University Research Park some 6-7 years ago, and now there's consideration that they're going to expand and relocate elsewhere with their impending lease expiration a few years down the road.
Yeah, I'm listening to you, and what I'm hearing is the more this is, I spoke a few weeks back at the broker forum, and the title of my speech was "The more things change, the more they stay the same." And that's what I'm hearing now, is that the economy may change and make the office market a little bit softer, But the basics are still the same. Where does the decision maker live? How easy is it to get employees? Well, you know, in this cycle, instead of us paying $2 a square foot, gosh, you know, the economy is tough, and I could get a 10-20 year lease at $1.50 a square foot. So all of a sudden that becomes more important. But those are the basics.
I agree with you. I do agree with you. You know, again, value play, getting the biggest bang for the buck, getting the best image, amenity package, the right environment for your employees, all of that you want to focus on. But at the end of the day, again, rate, you know, getting a good, solid economic deal. But again, satisfying and getting your, you know, the best value for a dollar.
Not only that never changes, but it may change depending upon the tenant, the time for the tenant. So you could take an Allen Matkins, a very prestigious real estate firm. They're up in the Irvine Airport area. Gibson Dunn is off of, Main Street?
Sure. Well, they're at 3161 Michelson.
Oh, okay. So they moved, but they're still in the airport area.
That's right.
And their practice, while they're very prestigious, their practice, they may not feel that, look, prestige is the most important thing. We've got a lot of attorneys. Maybe we need to have a little bit more affordable space.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, they were one of the first tenants. Well, they were basically the first tenant at 3161 Michelson. And New Century was earmarked for that building, and then, you know, they blew up. But Gibson was the really ended up becoming the anchor tenant for that building. So I think they did and cut a nice transaction. I wouldn't say that they saved money for moving from Jamboree Center, but what they did is they allowed themselves to recreate, build out space to create a new environment, a new fresh environment. And I think tenants will do that every 10 years.
Sure.
The space, as good as space is, I think there's always that appetite for a new space. Let's do a new build out. Let's start from scratch. And so those opportunities for tenants to go into shell buildings is often very attractive, so they can take an empty canvas and design and create the environment, optimum environment at that time.
And the optimum environment changes also, does it not? But depending upon technology, focus on employee work habits. You know, if you're going more to a
more of a collaborative, open environment.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be a hot thing.
And that is
now.
True. I would say that law firms are still doing, for the most part, building out space, as they have done in the past with perimeter offices and secretarial. But other companies, for sure, have become more open. I mean, in that collaborative, creative environment with, again, kitchen galleys and employee people places within the space to hang out and stimulate conversation, stimulate creativity. So all of that is very, very important.
That's going to shift also, I might add. I'm certain of it. Things not only change, they go, the more they change, the more they stay the same, and things go in cycles.
That's right. That's right. And interesting, a couple of transactions recently that occurred, Fox Interactive and Pacific Dental, two big 100,000 square foot users, both have gone into industrial buildings, old industrial buildings that are being rehabbed to create that creative environment with 17, 18 foot high ceilings, exposed ceilings, just very airy open space. and a very cool creative environment. So lots of different options out there for tenants, lots of different ideas, lots of different options. So all of that is available to them in our marketplace.
How is the office market right now?
You know, it's interesting. In 2011, we did about 2 million square feet of net absorption. Come first quarter, we did about 200,000 feet of negative. The feeling in the marketplace thus far in the first half of the year was, gosh, doesn't feel like there's a lot of deals. I talked to different listing brokers, and they're saying, gosh, the activity's down, not sure what's going on. The feeling is not nearly as robust as 2011, but the interesting dynamic is that all of that activity that we had in 2011, well, some of those deals that were done have actually commenced in the second quarter, so we had 1 million square feet of positive absorption in the second quarter, and you're going, oh my God. Well, that would indicate the market's really active. It doesn't feel active. Yes, there are deals out there, no doubt about it. There is activity, but it's just not as robust. But the good news is, 1 million square feet in the second quarter, that's really good. And thus, the vacancy rate, 13.5%. I mean, that's really positive.
I think people have gotten spoiled when things go crazy good. Then everybody expects crazy good all the time. And if it's just activity, that's probably the good thing, and that's probably the norm. As long as it's not negative, but even negative, you have to figure it out over a longer period of time. It's tough to measure things from quarter to quarter.
I agree. So where is our market? I think we're cruising along, nicely. And I think certain assets are demanding a higher lease rate. Other assets, depending on the size of space, is going to have to be had at more bargain pricing to get it leased. That's what's happening.
Thank you, Jack. And after we come back from these messages, we're going to hear from Brandy Bircher, who's going to talk to us a little bit about industrial and warehouse space in Southern California.
Go mobile with The Analyst. When the deal changes, and you know it will, be ready whenever, wherever to update property reports with The Analyst. Multi-page analysis in seconds sent straight from your mobile device to your client's email. Environmental summaries delivered right to your iPhone or iPad in as little as 10 minutes. Free from your desk at last with The Analyst. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Todd Kuhlman, and links to The Analyst. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail. And it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business. All on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com.
Now, I don't want to sound redundant, but if you have a chance, and if you're in Southern California or Orange County, California, on September 13th, I really do recommend that you go to the Sperry Van S. Brokers Forum. They're expecting anywhere from 250 to over 300 people attending there. It's a great opportunity to network. And I've got to tell you, after going through the last couple of years where all of these get-togethers with brokers kind of disappeared because there was nothing going on, it's really a pleasure to be involved with this operation and this program. Again, it's September 13th at 7:30 a.m. Breakfast starts at the Pacific Club in Newport Beach.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Chattanooga, there you are. Welcome back to CRE Radio, and we're talking about the movers and shakers of Southern California. Also, if you're listening to this show as a recorded version or a podcast, you can ask questions or give us comments by writing to us on Twitter at CRE Radio. That's the @ CRE Radio. Okay, so now why don't we go ahead and hear from Brandy Bircher. Brandy is from a very well-known and prestigious commercial real estate development company in Southern California and is currently the president of Goodman Bircher North America.
When we talk about who's buying and leasing and selling in Orange County, you know, in the industrial sector, there just isn't a lot of industrial other than infill. And our company's goal and mission is to be focused on logistics and warehouse and manufacturing facilities that are in the high absorption markets of the U.S., like Southern California. And which, if you get specific about where, that's the Inland Empire and infill LA and parts of Orange County. But the other thing is, we like to focus on projects that are, you know, buildings of 250,000 square feet or more. And so that starts to limit the Orange County infill, you know, marketplace. And so at the moment, I have nothing in Orange County. But being that I'm an Orange County-based company here in Irvine, that is looking at a, you know, North American platform for development, I guess that kind of keeps with the theme of what is Orange County doing. Well, an Orange County developer is developing in the Inland Empire, you know, 4.7 million feet at the moment. So, you know, that may be interesting. The Goodman Bircher organization, first of all, Howard, is a global company subsidiary. We are the wholly owned subsidiary of the Goodman Group of Australia. And in the last few weeks, we have announced our entry into the marketplace of the North American industrial manufacturing and distribution space. We have come in with $800 million of capital of equity, and that will be modestly leveraged, you know, probably well under 50%, and giving us, you know, between $1.4 billion, $1.5 billion of capital to pursue the primary developing of properties and the occasional acquisition of value-add opportunities in the high absorption markets of the United States. Clearly, the Inland Empire area and the infill Los Angeles industrial market in portions of Orange County are just, you know, fabulous marketplaces for logistics and manufacturing companies, you know, focused on local consuming of their product or eventual distribution eastward and northerly through rail and truck, you know, modals. So the opportunities that Goodman Bircher has are currently a large, well, two parcels totaling 275 acres. Both in the Inland Empire West portions of the valley, and will total about 4.7 million square feet. And the interesting thing is that we are really focused on buildings that are primarily, you know, 300,000 square feet and larger to accommodate a user base that e-commerce, 3PL, you know, logistics-centric type users, and those are the sectors that are really booming nationwide.
And despite all of the downturn in the Inland Empire, this is still a good current market for the Inland Empire.
Yes, it is. And you know, one of the things that has happened in the industrial sector is that when you look at the math, clearly most of the brokerage houses have researched the absorption and rent analysis on buildings of 10,000 square feet and more. So you get a lot of business park size economic data trends that skew what may be happening at the big box or upper end of the tenant scale. So when you're looking at users and spec buildings that are, you know, over a third of a million square feet, I think the data that we are accustomed to receiving from most of our sources need to be parsed even, you know, further to come up with the real data. And what we're finding is that the big box sector is anywhere between 3%, probably at the high end, to as low as, 1.5% vacancy.
When do you see Orange County actually improving?
Orange County has been a fabulous magnet for lifestyle, for all types of pay grade, employee, employer, residence, you know, choice of residency. And as a result, I think we'll always have very high demand to live here. And that means that with traffic increasing and, you know, an awareness of carbon footprint reduction, transportation is being discouraged and local consuming encouraged. So I think local manufacturing is going to be on the rise. We can talk about that in a moment, about what's going on in Asia to perpetrate more local manufacturing. And we have, you know, the office sector, which of course needs to return to its pre-2008 pace before we really start to see a recovery of job growth, of course. But warehouse manufacturing, tough to grow because just the lack of absorbable land and redevelopment opportunity.
Randy, thank you very much. That was very interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing you do very well out in the Inland Empire. Roger, why don't you let everyone hear from the people who pay the bills around here?
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com. If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's LOGOS, the number 2, then LIFE.com. Logostolife.com.
My next interview is with Frank Sanchez from BizNow Media. BizNow Media puts on various informative events and conferences. And I took Frank's interview also at the IREM convention. Let's hear a little bit from Frank.
Okay, we're at IREM OC, their annual conference here in Anaheim, and I am with Frank Sanchez. And Frank, who are you with?
I'm with BizNow Media.
Okay, now, would you tell us a little bit of something about BizNow Media and what publications you have?
Gladly. Well, BizNow was started in D.C. 6 years ago. We're a digital realty publication. We send out newsletters that are fun, snappy, and informative in CRE. We have some other publications in D.C., but you know, we're in 19 major metros now with an expansion plan to go into about 10 new markets. We're reaching 400,000 unique subscribers across the country. There's a viral nature of our product, and we have amazing open rates, amazing forward rates. So we try and be the quintessential people magazine of commercial real estate. We tell the story of the mover and shaker in CRE. We write, you know, uplifting kind of human pieces, but we also try and stay granular and talk about deals and stay away from, you know, being fluff.
And how do people get your publication?
Well, they can log on to our website, which is BizNow.com, and they can submit their email address, and we will send them emails based on what markets they want to be receiving emails in.
In addition to the written media, what other types of media are you utilizing for your publications?
So in conjunction with our publication, we have a event series, which is turned out to be a wildly successful event series. We do networking, panel speaker oriented events in every major metro once a month. So we'll do three main types of events. We'll do asset class specific events covering what's going on in either multifamily, industrial, office, you know, you name it. We're doing events on those. But then we do hot topic events, which we just did an event in Los Angeles where we had Nelson Rising, the head of the successor agency for the RDAs, talking about, hey, how do we get deals done? You know, how do we move forward? So that's more of a hot topic event. And now we're also doing what we call neighborhood events. So last month in Texas, we did a neighborhood event, which was State of Redlands. We had 925 attendees come out for lunch. We're doing an event coming up in July that will be Evolution of Downtown. This will be the second Evolution of Downtown event we've done, talking about the development and all the growth that we're seeing in downtown Los Angeles and how we get the 30-somethings to stick around to live in downtown. How do we make downtown a flourishing place? So, you know, we're bringing back some key players from Brookfield and McKenna Long, who's a client of ours. They'll be moderating one of our panels.
This Now Media sounds very interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing more from them in the future. My next guest is Chris Bennett. He's the Director of Development at Lab Holding, LLC. Now, I've got to say that Lab Holdings, they hold something near and dear to my heart, primarily because they are different, they are unique, they have a very unusual approach to their retail and mall management and development. They are developing a green mall, and they've already developed what they refer to as their anti-mall mall. And if you haven't noticed, I pretty much cherish anything that's a little bit different and unique. So why don't we hear a little bit about retail and Lab Holdings and their markets in Orange County and Southern California.
So the first retail project we did was actually called The Lab. And, you know, it was the tagline for that project was kind of the anti-mall. Mm-hmm. And The Lab opened in 93 on Bristol Street in Costa Mesa.
Sure. Wasn't that opposite, the farm over there?
The second project, well, The Lab is was the first project in 93. It's a small kind of retail center. It was based in kind of a rehab of an old industrial warehouse buildings, kind of a compound there. And the second project, which is immediately across the street, is called The Camp.
And okay.
That project is also on Bristol, and it is, while The Lab is a little bit more art and fashion related, The Camp, the theme there was to go after sustainable living and kind of, you know, healthy lifestyles. So everything there is either about green living or active sports, human-powered sports, cycling, hiking, different things like that, that lifestyle.
Your developments are very specialty-based. You target more of a youthful buyer.
I don't know if we specifically go after kind of the youth market. What we try to do is pick a specific culture and tailor a project towards that. So The Lab, since it's art and fashion, it's a little bit more funky and attracts kind of the younger crowd, whereas The Camp, I think our customer there ranges from young to old because it's about, you know, sustainability, and we have yoga studio, vegan restaurants, a bunch of things that kind of cater to that lifestyle. So we try to cater to a specific culture, and everything in our projects feeds into that culture. So we're not specifically going for a particular market. We're just trying to tap into a community.
Really are an anti-mall. You do things a little bit differently, but you target a very specific demographic, correct? Whether it be youth or something else, healthy living.
Yeah, I would say what makes us maybe the anti-mall is that you know, a standard mall is going after maybe just credit tenants, and there's not a specific theme or community that they're trying to tap into with the products that they're delivering. So you can go to Fashion Island and get really high fashion. You can get, you know, sports related things. You can get kind of across the board. And while it's a beautiful mall, I think we try to be a little bit more boutique and specific. So if you're at the camp, you won't find, you know, a Radio Shack or something that's not related to the specific lifestyle that we're trying to tap into. I would say that the lab, you know, while we focus on specific communities or cultures, like a lifestyle, whether it's green living or, you know, kind of foodies or whatever the category is, the other thing that we're really focused on philosophically is supporting small businesses and local businesses. And the company name is LAB, which is L-A-B, Little American Business. And the owner's philosophy from the beginning has been trying to support, you know, local businesses and help grow them into, you know, larger successful kind of operations.
Well, I think that's a great idea that you're working on. It's a lot different. So how is business generally for you going in Southern California? And I guess maybe you're going to talk about what areas may be better than others, or at least from your perspective.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of had a, you know, rough go the past few years, and we definitely haven't been immune to that. We've kind of seen a shift in, you know, the different types of businesses that are opening with us. And, you know, I think we were lucky because of the types of projects that we do. You know, we were a little bit insulated from, you know, just a standard mall or a standard retail operator. We have a really specific vision and kind of product offering that I don't think a lot of people do. So if you wanted to open a green shop or, you know, something in the sustainability arena in Orange County, I would say we're probably the best spot to go to, you know. And if we were just a general retail kind of center anywhere else in Costa Mesa, we might not be able to attract those tenants. And I think that really has held us over these past few years when, you know, leasing has been difficult and there's fewer businesses kind of, you know, coming around.
Recognizing your unique philosophy about supporting small businesses with some special emphasis on restaurants, what have you seen recently regarding food retail?
One of the things that we've seen recently is just the resurgence of small local culinary kind of offerings. So there's a lot more attention to local restaurateurs versus franchise kind of offerings. And I think that's been across the board, and we've seen a lot of growth in that area the past couple of years.
So, Chris, what are the new developments that you are looking to do now?
Yeah, we've got a couple projects in downtown Anaheim right now that we're really excited about. And we're opening one of them as we speak, and then another one is kind of in the works and maybe 6 months out. I think a lot of communities are looking for you know, temporary solutions right now, and you're kind of seeing that with these pop-up centers or just different kind of temporary solutions that maybe there's not financing available to build out the full project, or, you know, they still want to activate a certain area of their town, but, you know, this idea of bringing in a mixed-use larger development is just not the timing's not right for that. And so I think it's actually provided this great opportunity for kind of experimental ideas. And I think that's what's happening is there's developers out there, landowners that don't want to just see their land sit fallow, or maybe it's communities that their economic development want to invest in a neighborhood, but maybe the timing isn't right for a permanent development. So they're looking at these experimental kind of temporary solutions. But I think there's something to be learned from that, and, you know, it's definitely, you know, exciting and something we haven't seen before.
Well, I think that you've got a unique concept, although it's not new because you've been doing it for 20 years, but it hasn't quite caught on with everybody else, and perhaps it may not. But I like the laser focus that you have.
I think that the focus on a specific, really specific culture helps us across the board. So I get to work with, you know, the development side, and so I'm working with the architects and landscape architects, and it really helps me in terms of, if like at the camp, I know that I'm building green landscape-wise. I have really specific goals of retaining stormwater. Like, once I pick that specific culture, everything else, it's kind of affecting every other decision we make. So from a design standpoint, everything has to fall in line with that. From a tenanting standpoint, it really narrows, like, who we're going to go after. Like, we know that we wanted a yoga shop. So we picked the best yoga shops and started talking to them. You know, Cycle Shop, we wanted, you know, a vegan restaurant. And it really helps us, you know, define everything we do from design, tenanting, marketing, you know, just makes it a little bit easier and operational for us.
So the camp is not just finding tenants who are proponents of green, but the camp itself is a green center.
Yeah, so because that was our goal, and I think part of what we're trying to do there is by building a green center, we would be attracting like-minded type of businesses that appreciated kind of what we were doing and wanted to be a part of that. So we have a grass roof that sits over the Patagonia section of our seed shop. And we have, we did 100% stormwater retention on the site. And some of these things, this is a 10-year-old project. So some of these things were, you know, pretty aggressive at that point and not really appreciated by a lot of people. But I think the specific tenants that we were interested in bringing to our site appreciated that. And also, I think now our customers, you know, kind of see those things and understand that, you know, it's not just a story. We're actually trying to do this throughout the project.
So that's our show about the movers and shakers of Southern California. I'd like to take this opportunity to remind everybody that if you're in the area, please go to the Sperry Van S. Brokers Forum on September 13th at 7:30 a.m. at the Pacific Club in Newport Beach. And by all means, attend the NRTA conference in Palm Desert, California from October 7th through October 10th. Look forward to seeing you there. Roger, why don't you close the show?
This has been CRE Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a topic you would like to discuss, Howard can be reached at 949-288-3707. That's area 949-288-3707. Or by email to howard@creradio.com. CRE Radio is a live and recorded radio show accessible from both the web and your smartphone. Visit creradio.com to download any broadcast anytime or to receive newsletters and updates from Howard. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the sole intent of educating our listeners. Howard and his guest conversations specifically do not intend to offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, we recommend you seek out your own counsel. Remember, laws and practices may vary from state to state. Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Unauthorized editing or copying of portions of this show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.